it's amazing, really, you know, what they're able to do, especially, you know, in the real world, so to speak, where not in security. I mean, security is an important domain to apply this stuff, but I think we get too laser focused, right? Where it's like, oh, the anomalies, find the anomalous logins or superhuman travel. And it ends up being like four or five use cases. But then on like the business side, right, like being able to find these patterns across like a specific domain, or being able to like find different quality management, efficiency management, like it's absolutely crazy.
Welcome to the Cyber Ranch podcast, recorded under the big blue skies of Texas, where one CISO explores the cybersecurity landscape with the help of friends and experts. Here's your host, Alan Alford, President and CISO at Alan Alford Consulting.
Howdy, y'all, and welcome to the Cyber Ranch podcast. That's Jonathan Rao, VP and Distinguished Engineer over at Query, and a proponent of what he calls Sec Data Ops. Now, Jonathan is quite active on LinkedIn. I've been following his stuff for some time, and his takes, though often spicy, tend to be spot on. I wanted Jonathan to come on the show and share his insights. So, Jonathan, thank you so much for coming on down to the ranch.
Alan, thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right, so let's get started with Sec Data Ops. What is it?
Uh-oh, I hate this question, even though I invented it. So truthfully, Sec Data Ops is a quote-unquote fun post I came up with, just more poking fun at DevSecOps and all the dash ops that were going on. I was kind of raised in that transitory cloud period of DevSecOps just coming online. Let's put everything in the pipeline. And then at IHS Market, I quickly realized that, oh, with real software development teams and not just demo environments, this doesn't exactly work. But we still need to do our jobs. And how best to do it? Well, some sort of empiricism, right? And what's the best empirical thing that we have access to? Data. So really, Sec Data Ops, you know, when you get beyond the meme-ness of it, is, you know, really what you do today when you build a security program is working backwards from the jobs to be done. And then instead of just going out and buying a tool or procuring something, maybe you do that, you work with the data on backwards, where it's like, okay, to solve this question, to either operate this control, mitigate this risk, or get good sensing on this risk or on this specific threat, what do we need to collect to be able to, you know, either interdict it, observe it, detect it, neutralize it, and whatnot. So at its core, that's really what Sec Data Ops is about. It's like actually using data, becoming a data engineer, analyst, scientist, if need be, to affect better security outcomes. And then you just keep rinsing and repeating from there.
Nice. So I was going to ask you what's the focal point, but I think I already know the answer to that. It's data.
Yeah, it's the data, right? And it's not just collecting the data. I think we in security, no matter what specialty you are, I mean, you could be in security sales, or you could be in one of the G or R or C or all of them, I guess, as most people are, or in engineering architecture, you're going to have access to a lot of data, be that in a CMDB, a CRM, an ERP, a CNAPP, you know, all the acronyms, right? So it's actually using it smartly. It's like, all right, we have a bunch of redundancies in vulnerability management. Why do we need that? Oh, because we're running Rocky Linux or something weird inside of dev, and this specific tool covers that, and then this tool covers 90% of everything else. Cool, you just validated the data, right? So that's really the whole gist of it. It's everything you do. It's like, do we actually have some sort of truthiness, some sort of empiricism behind here? And then you could get to the qualitative stuff, because at the end of the day, that fleshy 4-pound anxiety machine in your skull is the most powerful asset that anybody in security has. The data is just to get you there, right? You turn data to information to intelligence, you use intelligence to, you know, hopefully affect some outcome or improve your targeting about whatever it is that you're trying to find, again, depending on your sub-discipline within security.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Just this morning, I was playing with Rich Sireson and Doug Hubbard, have that book, How to Measure Anything in Cybersecurity Risk. And their edition 2 came out, and I had the Monte Carlo sim spreadsheet from edition 1, but I realized, oh, I'll bet they updated that for edition 2, and they did. And I was playing with that all morning, you know, obviously manipulating real data, running analysis, but to your point, you know, the brain at the end of it is really what makes it matter. Doing risk assessments for clients and trying to walk them through some of that math and some of that logic and some of that data-centric, risk-centric view, the brain comes in handy. The storytelling component, I think, has to always be there, right? I mean, at the end of the day, I think since we were cave people, right, sitting around the fire and telling stories seems to be the principal way of transmitting information from one brain to another. So all that data work, right? We have to do that too.
That's exactly it. I mean, you figure that Neanderthal or Cro-Magnon or whatever was sitting around a fire probably 7,000 years ago. And just like we talk about, like, oh, hey, don't install that, you know, mobility software. Don't install that remote telephony software because you'll get hacked. Them two were like, ooh, ooga booga, ran in a big cat with long teeth. Stay away from those things. They don't want to be pet, right? And, you know, it's completely right, because at the end of the day, the data is just to get you there. Now, don't get me wrong. There's obviously things that, like, straight up you could get, you know, some sort of measurement or signature and know, like, okay, we're going to take an action based on this. It's pretty unambiguous, right? If you don't have, I don't know, encryption turned on in a bucket, or, you know, that one's boring, right? Now, encryption's always turned on the bucket, but if you don't have a specific key with a specific policy that only allows specific principles, you're going to get alerted to that. That one's pretty cut and dry. And if you need to have those controls, well, hopefully you know if you need to have them or not, go with the data, right? But then the more nuanced stuff where, you know, you think about, like, threat group attribution, right? I know that's the big thing now. Everything's a cyber attack. Ships, you know, driving into bridges or cyber attacks, granny falls down, loses her dentures, cyber attack, stuff like that. You actually need to have well qualified. You start that journey with data, but to your point, you end it with the storytelling. You end it with the actual human analysis to put your eyeballs on and be like, is this really, you know, because your sensors could be screaming at you that, hey, everything's wrong. The Monte Carlo simulations could be spitting out that, oh, your loss exceedance curve is in the billions. But maybe you jacked up data somewhere, or maybe you have a faulty tool, or just maybe it's a red herring and you still need to be able to, you know, analyze around it, right? That's why security analysis is such an important deal.
Yeah. Yeah. Tier three threat hunters, right? I mean, this is, you know, it's the same model there, right? There's so many false positives. There's so many incidents or events that aren't incidents. There's a lot of noise in the business. So who should be in charge of Sec Data Ops?
That's a good one. So when I wrote this manifesto, when I was at the CISO at Lightspin, you know, I admit I was a startup CISO, right? Like, I think we're a little bit jankier, more like in the weeds, having to touch everything because you have to, right? You're the only security hire, and then you end up being pre-sales, and then you end up being a marketer. And then, you know, before you know it, you get seven jobs. But when I actually sat down and thought about it, I was like, you know, this would be great for a deputy CISO type role, where if you have, like, your traditional CISO who may have came up the ranks through audit or through, like, IT ops, enterprise architecture, who may not, you know, they're probably 25 years, 35 years in almost. I'm not going to expect them to go, hey, learn what Jupyter and PySpark and Iceberg and data warehouses and all this crazy stuff is. And neither should they, right? Like, they're at their position to be able to, you know, talk down that from that ERM view all the way down. So maybe a deputy, or maybe like a head of data of Sec Data Ops, or a head of security innovation, but it should be somebody who's on the CISO leadership team, if not the CISO themselves, and maybe it is the CISO if the place is small, and obviously somebody who has good security, like, in the trenches, but who also has the good data skills. And maybe they don't need to, again, write the Jupyter notebooks and build the models, but ideally, if they came from that data background, they'd be able to hire the right people, right? Because at the end of the day, security program success is about empowerment. So if your CISO is instilling somebody with the full faith and force of the security program to, hey, go forth on Sec Data Ops, and then that person in turn could go and actually hire a head of data engineering, hire a head of data science, have the funding, have the training to get everybody spun up, but then also have that security acumen to work with the team. So you need somebody like that. And they're out there, right? Back at IHS Market, I had a great team. I had two ladies that were working for me, Katie and Olivia. And without them, like, none of the data stuff that we did, from the lowly pandas scripts up to the big giant graph that we built, like, we essentially built Wiz before Wiz was even a thought at IHS Market, like, in a big freaking enterprise. You know, without them, without our other leadership team there, like, we wouldn't have been able to do what we do. And I wasn't the right person to lead it. I just had the dumb idea, right? So you need folks like that. And maybe they're just straight up data people, right? Because I think the security concepts are a bit easier to learn than all the data stuff, having to, like, actually learn the data stuff instead of just going, Sec Data Ops, put everything in a lake. I'm like, what's a lake? Actually, I should probably learn. So that was a long-winded way of saying that probably a security data leader. And if you can't find a security data leader, hire a data leader. Teach them security. Give them a budget, and then, you know, go forth.
Sure. Yeah. And it, you know, it's funny because I've got, you know, my master's is in InfoSec and InfoSystems, right? So kind of that IT plus InfoSec paradigm. And I did database design and, you know, stuff that I'd already done earlier in my career, outer joins, inner joins, and all the standard, you know, SQL stuff. But true data science is an esoteric art form I understand almost nothing about, like truly understand nothing about. It you know, and these days the overlap between the data scientists and the AI is another phenomenon, right? Like somehow they're the ones expected to be working with AI in many cases rather than the cyber folks working with the AI, right? I think the data folks are more intrinsically close to the use cases and the utility of AI than the cyber folks are until such a time as more cyber AI tools come down the pike. And, of course, everyone's claiming to have that. And I don't know how much of it's really there or not. That's a whole nother story. But, where do you get the data skills? Like if you haven't, you know, gone to college and specialized in it, if you don't have a degree in data science, like how do you possibly hope to keep up with that world? Because that's something I would really love to dig into.
Honestly, in data science, actually having worked, you know, with Olivia and Katie and other DSs throughout my career, right? Because I think there's definitely a fine difference between like an AI scientist, right? Like somebody at OpenAI, Ilya, I think their chief scientist is, and, you know, the folks at Anthropic versus a data scientist versus an ML engineer, right? And I think the public cloud has commoditized it enough that, you know, everybody could kind of LARP, right? Live action role play as an ML engineer. You either have like your first party AI or ML services, right? Like think Amazon Recognition, like the FBI right now is running a program, or maybe it's out of DHS, like Project Tier. And what they're doing is like, you know, all the mumble SoundCloud rappers and people who like to wave their Glock switches on camera, they're using recognition to, you know, object identify and crawl across the, you know, several exabytes of data. Civil liberties aside, you know, those aren't data scientists, right? Those are just people who are hooking up images that they capture and scrape in S3. So, you know, that doesn't necessarily make you one. And then same thing, like you could roll SageMaker notebooks, you could build, you know, giant corpuses to build your own custom NLP for like a translation layer. You could, you know, build unsupervised learning systems, deep neural networks that could look for anomalies and, you know, systems login, Okta logs, Auth0 logs, Cognito logs, whatever. You could just pick that stuff up, you know, pretty much. But to be an actual data scientist, like this is the one time I'll say, like, go to college, you know, or maybe try to take all the free courses you can online. I know that like MIT and Harvard, I believe, like, or at least their extension, and maybe even Rutgers, I'm naming like the four colleges I know, have courses out there. But, you know, to me, that's such a different skill set. And you might, and going back to the psych data ops, you might not need that type of person right away, like an actual data scientist, because unless you are collecting data and have a good idea of like, hey, I either need to predict on this thing that I don't have, or we need to be able to write this kind of anomaly framework that we can't serve with like a commodity, a commodity ML model, then you need a data scientist. But for the rest of the data skills, I mean, they're free now, right? Like anybody at any time could go and spin up a database, spin up a data warehouse, right? BigQuery, Snowflake, Databricks, Dremio, Datastrato, AWS Glue, using Athena, Azure Synapse, Azure Analytics Laboratory, and, you know, whatever Google calls there is like Dataproc or something like that, right? Like there's all these tools in the public cloud as well as other, you know, open source stuff, right? From Airbyte, Mage AI, you could pick all these things up, and I'm just naming off tools, but, you know, just start small. I think SQL is probably the most formative thing. You're going to find it everywhere. Nearly every single warehouse, lake house, swamp has some sort of SQL interface or has a SQL processing engine. Even in Pandas, Polar, Spark, you're going to find SQL. So learn that. That's easy. You could go on like W3 schools and literally go one by one, like SQL select, SQL insert into, right? And then, you know, maybe take a Udemy course, maybe take a specific data course, even like a AWS, like data analytics specialty test, right? Like you'll probably learn some data concepts there. It depends on, you know, what the technology is and where you are in your journey. Because again, all these tools, all these table formats, they're open source, right? Like there's commercial success around them, but for the most part, every single one of them is free. So it's really just a matter of having a job to be done. Going back to the first thing, like, hey, what is it that I actually do? What's painful about it? Where can data be useful? Where can I source it? How do I get at it? Right. And then now you're learning how to scrape and pull and transform and load and use a different technology. So, you know, it's all about experiential hands-on, but data science, yeah, go get your master's.
Yeah. But you know, it's interesting. Some of those questions that you ask when you first approach data, you know, from a data science perspective, they're the same kinds of questions that we're asking as security folks. You just rattle a few of them off. How do I access? Where does it reside? You know, who is supposed to access? What does it mean? You know, it's not a leap in terms of the physics. It's a leap in terms of the how, right? Like, yeah. That's where I get caught up is, you know, like a NoSQL database. I know what a NoSQL database is. I know what a NoSQL is. I don't know how to actually install, configure, and run one.
Right. You know? That gets to the ops part of SecData Ops, right? Is that, hey, if you're going to own this, like, you need to own it. Gone are the days that well, let me preface this, that if you have a good data and analytics shop in your company, lean on them. And for the most part, like 99%, because now I'm crossing over and I'm on like data LinkedIn, which is completely different than security LinkedIn. It's a lot, I don't know, the humor's better and it's a lot less admonishments and security. It's like, if you don't do it this way, like, you're going to die. Everybody's going to get hacked. You're going to lose all your money. You get fired.
Do they spend all their time asking the exact same questions or making the same proclamations over and over and over again like we do on LinkedIn and cyber?
A little bit. Some of them do. But I think there's like a clear cut between, like, you know, the 100,000 follower people who just need to like compulsively come up with content that, you know, gets eyes on it, versus the leaders and, you know, the actual technicians in the space. And the technicians in the space versus the technicians in our space, I think, are a little less cynical, but not that much, right? Because it's a hard job as well. You know, security, you could go back to the trope of like lives depend on it. And it's like, not really. Like, if you get hacked, the company's going to be fine, probably. Like, you know, the customers might not be fine, but nobody dies for the most part. And
IoT, I would argue, is a different story, and critical infrastructure is a different story.
Yeah, when you get into like, yeah, when you get into like IoT, ICS, SCADA sort of things, where like, yeah, if I take out that web server that's an interface to your SCADA system and you don't have any fallback, or you administer all the controls through the IT side instead of the OT side, yeah, I could turn off the temperature gauges in your giant drilling rig and that thing catches on fire.
Right. Stuxnet anyone?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I could, you know, just tweak your centrifuges a little bit, and instead of enriching your uranium, it's spitting the uranium everywhere, right? So, you know, I don't mean to say that not every single occurrence isn't life or death, but I just think there's almost like a little bit too much of a seriousness in cybersecurity versus the data side. So they're a little bit more, I don't know, like, easy to talk to in a way, a little bit more approachable, and
a little less drama.
They also like sharing. Yeah, there is a little less drama. I mean, it's hard, right? Because it's like, how much drama are you going to make about an ETL tool? I think, you know, well, except for Airflow, if you talk about orchestration tools, that's where they start to get chapped a little bit. But going back to the data science thing, I think you're exactly right. That kind of formative, like, asking questions, the actual scientific part of it is great to watch in person. I remember doing it where I was like, just do an ML, Olivia and Katie. And they're like, well, why? And like asking 30 questions. I'm like, all right, this is an interrogation. Like, what did I do to you two? But it's the method for the madness. But then able to take all that data, you know, all that analysis in your head and be like, okay, we're going to pick this model. We're going to build it this way. We need to use this. We have these hyperparameters, these weights. I'm like, well, I don't know what any of that means. I'm like, you guys just built something from scratch. I'm like, I'm glad it works, and let's just leave it at that, right? Like that, you know, I think sometimes people look at security like that, like, oh, wow, it's a crazy dark art. What'd you just do? Is that an Nmap A? What is that? Are you a hacker? And I'm like, no, like that is actual like dark magic, sorcery. Like, I don't know what that is, how they do that job, but, you know, and then it just keeps going up from there, like the AI scientists and whatnot, you know, and they're building graph neural networks and they're doing all this crazy stuff. Like, I know what it is tangentially, but it, like you, I'm like, I don't know how it works. And I'm kind of glad that I don't. I think that's a bridge too far for me personally, where it's like, I have too much stuff in my head going on. Like, I can't add the data science. I'll just pull models off of SageMaker and say I'm an ML engineer if I need to.
There you go. Yeah, the very first data scientist I ever met, was walking me through pattern recognition and finding the unknown queries. Like, in other words, what data reveals what data without knowing what query to execute in the first place. And this particular fellow worked at a like a wholesale auto parts dealer who had a website portal that all the retail auto parts places would log into. And, you know, they were discovering weird esoteric connections, like, you know, and I'm going to make one up here, but like people who order headlights also like blinker fluid, you know, like, you know, like just these weird trends that weren't spotted. You know, if they're ordering a door handle, the odds are they're going to need a radiator flush within X days, you know, like weird trends that just made no sense at all. But there they were to be uncovered. And my question to him was, how did you uncover these in the first place if you didn't know they were there? And that's when the whole data science conversation took off. And I realized, okay, you understand a whole world I don't understand.
And now for a brief word from our sponsor. Alford & Adams Consulting offers strategic and transformative cybersecurity consulting, fractional CISO and vCISO services. We offer assessments, plans, programs, and anything else you might need to be successful in your cybersecurity journey. We can even help you find good cyber insurers and good partners to help manage the day-to-day. Find out more at alfordandadams.com. That's alfordandadams.com. Thank you.
It's amazing, really, you know, what they're able to do, especially, you know, in the real world, so to speak, where not in security. I mean, security is an important domain to apply this stuff, but I think we get too laser focused, right? Where it's like, oh, the anomalies, find the anomalous logins or superhuman travel. And it ends up being like four or five use cases. But then on like the business side, right? Like being able to find these patterns across like a specific domain, or being able to like find different quality management, efficiency management, like it's absolutely crazy.
Yeah. There's the famous story. I think it was Target who got the young lady in trouble. She was buying certain items, and based on their algorithms and their data matching, they figured out she was pregnant and started sending her new baby stuff. Only her parents didn't know she was pregnant. And she hadn't purchased any pregnancy items. That was the crazy part. Like the items she purchased were precursors and led up to and had a data trend with. And again, it was that undiscovered correlation type stuff going on. But yeah, retail needs it. Business needs it. I mean, it's, to your point, far more useful for the greater organization than it is just for cyber, right? Like we're such a niche compared to the overall effort of the bigger organization. We really are.
Yeah. You know, and then it goes back to showing value, right? And it's funny on the technology, business management, IT financial management side, like when you ask one of their practitioners, like, what is value? And I think they have the best idea of it. They're like, it's just how you feel about what you bought. You know, at the end of the day, there's like too many like, oh, you know, if you want to be on the board, like you have to articulate the value. And then like they just have this wall of text. And it's like, what are you yapping about? Like, what's the value? How do you show it? Oh, well, you know, if you do like the cost per control and the risk reduce, I'm like, why are we adding dollars to vulnerabilities? Like at the end of the day, do you make the CIO and the CFO and the CEO feel safe? Right. Or is it working? Are you in the news? Like then you're delivering value already. You don't need to run around and justify it. I do think there's some articulation needed for like, okay, here's why we need to. And again, that goes back to the ethos of SecData Ops. It's like, sit down, you know, stop moving, stop trying to go buy a freaking tool that you saw on a magic triangle quadrant wave, whatever the heck that you're using to buy. And like, what are my jobs to be done? Like, why am I leading this security program? Like, what's our business? What's our threat environment? Do we have a threat model? Do we know how to threat model? Do we even need to start from there? Maybe we don't start from there. It's like, go to your leaders. Like, what's the most important thing that you do every day? And how can you do it faster? Right? Like, that's the sort of thing. And I think we got stuck in this mindset of like, we need to like do all this grandiose, you know, full military parade, you know, early medieval period pomp and circumstance stuff to be able to
castles with moats
do. Yeah. And then that's what happens. You build these ivory towers and you want to be the smartest person in the room. And if you try too hard to be the smartest person in the room, you know, you're going to get smacked. So it's like, humble yourself and, you know, get back to the square root of things essentially. And then you'll be able to articulate what you need and what you want and the why. And I think that's a lot more important, right? Because if you didn't drive value, do you not see what's going on in the economy right now? Interest rates, inflation, freaking, you know, people getting laid off like for not showing up to the office, which is a trap. If they didn't value you, they would fire your entire security program. And that's been done before, right? So it's like, don't worry about that. Worry about like how to be more effective at the job.
Yeah. Yeah, it, you know, it's funny. I, you know, on my website, I've got my BIA light tool, my business impact analysis tool. And you said that really quickly. You kind of gave it an either or. Do you want to do threat modeling or do you want to go to the business and say what matters to you? Well, I do both, right? Like, business impact analysis is nothing more than sitting down with the rest of the leaders of the business and saying, what do we care about the most as a collective, right? And you give everyone their own spreadsheets to fill out, and they all bring to the table, well, I care about this, and I care about that, and I care about the other. All right, let's kind of quantify that care, and let's raise our hands asking some really simple questions. If it were to crash and be burned to the ground, how long could we go before it really sucked? 1 day? 4 hours, 1 week, 2 weeks, you know, and it, you ask those kind of just human questions, and you eventually get this collective understanding from the group. Okay, I guess really what we're saying is we think that the call center phones are more important than the email, you know, but that's less important than the source code, you know, da 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 da. And you come to a collective understanding, and then you pivot and do that threat model and do that. Okay, I'm the bad guys and I want to go after these things.
Yeah.
How do I do it?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and then you can start to balance the vulnerability and, you know, likelihood and impact and Monte Carlo sims and get into all that good jazz, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, you're gonna get me talking about FAIR here soon, which is an experiment we tried. But no, you're exactly right, and I think you should. Not that I think, like, you should, like, when you have the time and when you have the organizational expertise, like, you should start like doing an overall like enterprise risk management view, which is inclusive of more than just tech and cyber, right? Like, there's other risk flavors. Like, there's probably at a big company a management risk committee or a special audit committee or something, either at the board of director level or at the like SVP, EVP, or managing director. It depends, you know.
Yep.
What's higher?
Might even be a chief risk officer, right?
Right, right. Or you could have like a real like legit chief risk officer with chief audit underneath them, chief compliance, right? Like, you know, that's how it was at IHS Market, where it started like, hey, ERM view into IRM. And we had another woman that I worked with there, Megan, and she owned a crown jewel risk assessment, where you went in with the BIA doing kind of like the Basel II style, maybe a little bit of like SIG core a little bit, like, right, like reversing the TPRM, being able to collect that data, you know, trying to get at like the actual risk bucket. And it's like, okay, what's the technology risk? What's the information security risk? Identify the crown jewels with all that data. And then we were adding that into our graph, where we had, you know, in our hierarchy, in our ontology that we built, like taking in that crown jewel data, that BIA data, building the threat model. And then I also owned OFSEC. And the whole idea was like, we could use this for targeting now, like flip that around. Like, we could actually, instead of building a threat model, actively target with our red team based on these, you know, on this telemetry, but then on the raw data that we actually had there, right? And maybe that you don't need to get to that, like the actual targeting part, right? But I think everything that comes before that, you know, you're 100% right. It's kind of a lost art because it's almost too simple, right? It's not sexy enough. It's like BIA, crown jewels. Like, they I don't know. I feel like talking heads in the space, like, using those words, like business impact and business value and crown jewel. But I'm like, what's the crown jewel? They're like, oh, that EC2 instance. I'm like, what? A cloud service, one cloud instance is your crown jewel? How?
If you're a technology company, the odds are it's your source code. Or if it's a hardware company, the odds are it's your hardware designs. Like, the crown jewels is the stuff that if the bad guys got it, could wipe you out, you know, catastrophic event, right?
Yeah. Yeah, or like an app of apps. Yeah, you're exactly right.
So, all right, we've talked people, we've talked technology, we just talked process as well. Is there anything more in that trifecta, people, process, and technology, we should point out about SecData Ops, or did we cover it all?
No, I think the process is probably worth like chewing over again. Like, I can't stress enough, right? Like, it's all three of the acronyms. Like, the ops part gets laid down too often, and it's something that I don't think security teams are too used to doing, except for like folks in the GSOC. I think folks who've came from like the world of like the Q radars, managing Splunk before Splunk Cloud, managing Elk, you know, building their own detection, Sigma rules, writing stuff in KQL, like actually things that are brittle or could be brittle. I think they understand, you know, the rigor and the process behind operationalization. But when you are now getting into like actually moving data, setting data contracts, defining an SLA, currency, how long we're going to keep the data for, and then, you know, also keep it in mind like D data sovereignty requirements and retention requirements, deduplication, encrypting the data, safeguarding it. Because a lot of what we deal with like is toxic material, right? Where, you know, your SecData Ops program could very well become a crown jewel. I know our cyber risk graph was. We had, you know, billions of relationships in it. And if you knew how to write Gremlin, you know, and it's not that the threat actors can't do that. In a lot of cases, a threat actor is a lot better than we are, right? Or a lot more technologically skilled, you know, that's a major risk. And that's why the process is so important, not just from like the data governance layer of like, okay, what's our processes around dedupe, gathering, normalization, standardization, retention periods, but also the process around like, okay, what's our uptimes? What's our SLAs? Who are we going to have on call, right? Like this data stuff doesn't go away just because like you're at the freaking beach in Tenerife or in Cabo, you know, getting bent off margs. Like you need to be able to make sure that this stuff runs. And then, you know, the process for like, how do we identify new data sources? How do you onboard things? Do you have to come with a BIA? Do you have to come with a threat model? Do you have to come with like an actual new threat from the CTI team? Or it's like, oh, APT 69420 Swamp Donkey, they're coming after us. We have them 100% attributed. They recorded a video with a crazy flag and ski masks. Like, we need to get this data to see if they've infiltrated, right? Like, all of that has to be defined, and not all at once, right? Like, I think it's fine to piecemeal it, and it's fine to take a page out of the book of startups or dev teams, software teams, and just be scrappy, you know, stay dangerous, right, with it. Like, as I always say, and just pick a thing and run with it, and then add maturity on top of it. And that's a process as well, where you define like, hey, how mature, maybe P1, P2, P3, whatever you want to call it, right, before we move on to the next big chunk. And this is a continuous thing. Like, it never goes away. It's not like, oh, I do a SecData Ops, we got Databricks, and we're good to go, right? But yeah.
And you alluded to something there when you talked about retention, is just good old-fashioned data lifecycle management, right? Like, that still matters in the modern world. It never goes away that we have to have RTO and RPO, that we have to have retention, that we have to have classification, that we have to know, is this data worth keeping around when it's still useful to the bad guys, but it's not useful to us, right? Like, I see this all the time, that folks will have, you know, oh, well, we don't really use that data anymore. And I go in and look at that data, and there's PHI in there, or there's PII in there. And it's like, okay, if you're not using it, the bad guys could get it and could still absolutely use it. This is the worst possible data story right here. Has all the utility to the bad guys and none of the utility to you, and yet you're keeping it around, right? So lifecycle to me is super critical in all this,
too. 100%. I mean, that's a huge cornerstone. Go back to like places that have like a chief risk officer, chief privacy officer. Like, you talk to any CPO in like a healthcare management system.
Oh, they are on top of that.
Yeah, they're on top of it. I mean, minimum necessary was a big project that I worked on when I was at Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey Horizon. And I was like, minimum necessary, like, what is this? And it's like, no, like, it was super important, right? Like, because when you hear it, it's like, what does that mean? It's like, take exactly what you need for as long as you need it, the specific factors, pseudonymize, anonymize, encrypt, mask. You should take that approach, you know, going back to data lifecycle management in the SecData Ops program and outwards, right? It's like, always use the smallest chunk that you could do to get by. And, you know, who's good at that? Our IT ops brethren, right?
Because this ties engineers. Into identity and access management. This ties into RBAC. This ties into joiners, movers, leavers. This ties into all that good ops stuff, right? Well, last question I got for you on this subject is the community, the greater community. What is the community doing wrong here with regards to all this? Like you see the chatter on LinkedIn, and I'm curious, what's your take on what is the community getting wrong here?
Yeah, I think that it kind of bifurcates in like two ways. Either folks like yapping about it, right? They just talk a big game about value and being on a board and doing all this. And it's like, hey, aspirations, like, I'm not going to say don't go for that. Like, I want to be on the board of directors. I want to buy a hockey team. I want to start a missile company. Like, you know, you should never limit yourself, right? But I think that on that side, like, you have the yappers who just want to talk theory and get engagement and really don't say much and put out a lot of bad information, right? About, you know, if you look at some of like the stupid collaborative articles they have on LinkedIn, right? Like some people answer those seriously and it worries me because the serious answers they give just make no sense at all. It's like, they just want to hamstring you. They just want to talk and have, again, the castles and moats and the ivory tower, got to make it look like we're the most important function. And I think that's bad. And then on the other side, it's the, you know, and I've been guilty of this, like, I'll just buy a tool and it'll be fine. Right. It's like, why do you need Sec Data Ops? Like, a CNAP already, you know, does all this correlation for me. Why do I need to do that with EDR raw telemetry? Why should I pull my raw logs from MDE or from CrowdStrike FDR? Like, I have an EPP, I have an MDR. They already do it for me. It's like, do they? Like, are you covered, right? And I'm not talking about like the let's play MITRE tech bingo and freaking fill out all the technology or all the technique levels, right? Which is dumb. Like, you have to look at the procedures, but that's another topic. I think it's either you over-index on the process or really pomp and circumstance. Maybe they think pomp is process, and then the ones that over-index on technology. And I think there's time for like actually getting in and be like, no, let's go full waterfall and have an 8-hour meeting and sit down and figure it out. And there's also a time where it's like, hey, if this one tool does 10 things decently well enough, why not just add information to bolster it so it takes that from well enough to really, really well, right? Or identify a new tool to buy. So I'm not saying that, but I just think there's like too much self-serving. That's what it really comes down to. And that's what I kind of hate about the community, right? Where, you know, they want to have their cake and eat it too. And it's really only a small handful of people. There's not a lot of them out there. And most of them have blocked me because I've, you know, might have said a word or two to them about how I really felt about it. But it does ruin it for everybody else. And just think of all the folks who've either been laid off or want to get in the industry. And they're either told like, oh, it's super easy, anybody could do this. Or, oh, it's like too difficult, don't do it.
Yeah, nobody can do it. Yeah.
Right. It's like,
yeah,
oh,
we vacillate between that polarity for sure. That it's one or the other, and rarely is the story in between. And that's just like a lot of the tropes and the memes and the standard arguments that have been said 100 times. Do you or don't you need to be a technical CISO? Is there or is there not a cyber resource shortage problem with people? You know, how do we get a seat at the board? Am I an advisor only, or do I own the risk? You know, blah, 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 blah. It seems like in this industry, we talk the same topics to death and without resolution sometimes.
Well, I think a lot of these things have been resolved, right? And a lot of times it comes back to it depends. And I don't know, maybe it's a meta commentary on humanity and just like the state of the Western world where we can't deal in ambiguity. It has to be like, we have to be told, it has to be dictated, it has to come from some authority on high, whatever that might be for somebody, right? And I don't think that's the right thing. It's like, we need to be comfortable. It's like, how can you not be comfortable living with ambiguity in this field, right? Like, you will never know everything there is to know.
You will never know all the bad guys. You will never know all the vectors. You will never know all the vulnerabilities. You will never know all the risks. You will never know all the exploits. You will never know all the fill in the blank. You're never going to know it all.
Exactly. And I think folks are just not comfortable with that for some reason, or, you know, and then on the other hand, you know, you have folks that like need to be coddled and they have to be told like, oh yes, like you got this, you could get in with like no work and make 100K. There's a lot of vipers out there. There's a lot of people who are in it for themselves, a lot of people who just want to use the grift as a way to get money. But I think, again, that's a small majority. And I've spent a lot of time talking about it and kind of making my own commentary on LinkedIn as well. But for the most part, folks are just normal. They're humble. They want to learn, whether it's about Sec Data Ops, whether it's about AI, even though some of them take it too far, right? Where it's like, you know, you're a YouTuber for 5 years, which is okay, fine. And then all of a sudden you're an AI security expert. Really? How does
right.
that work?
How does
and now
that
you're
work?
Selling, you know, consultant slots for 100 G's on your website. You're like, oh, you know, get in on my TED talk, right? It's like, it becomes very like, you know, like the supplement people and like the white coat gym bros, not that, you know, not to use
the too, executive coaches that come right? come at you with
exactly
an
right.
unsolicited like the, pitch all about how they're going to improve
the knockoff
whatever.
David Huberman's, the knockoff David Goggins, and maybe they themselves are knockoffs of themselves, but you know, I don't care. Right. It's like, it's a person on social media. Who cares? Cause at the end of the day, if you don't want to hear something, you just, not engage with it.
Right. You can ignore, right? That's yeah, and that's the option we always forget. You don't have to respond to it. You don't have to get mad. You can just ignore and move on, right?
I mean, just ignore it. It's like, hey, look, if it's not useful stuff, if it's just somebody talking to drive up controversy to get views, it's like, let them be, right? There's a reason they want to do it, you know, more power to them. But I think it's fine living with ambiguity. It's fine not knowing all the answers. You know, I don't know if I'm humble about it or just too self-destructive about it, but like, even I put it out, I'm like, I don't like sec data ops. Like, I can't, if you ask me 10 different days, I'd give you 10 different answers, right? And I, you know, quote unquote, came up with it, right? Like, I don't know how everything's supposed to look. I don't know how everything operates, right? I know my data skills suck. My security skills suck. My people skills aren't that good either, obviously. Some of my memes, I like post them. I'm like, ah, oh, that was a good one. And I was like, oh, why did I post that? And then, you know, you see like 3,000 views and one like. It's like, oh, yeah, people are probably like, what the hell is his problem? You know, so it's like, look, You're going to take an L, you're going to get scuffed up, and that's the part. If you don't lose, if you don't, you know, get scraped up in this, if you don't query the live database and run up a $2,000 bill in Databricks on the first day of your sec data ops program, you're probably not doing something right. Like, you should, you know, sometimes throw caution to the wind, because our adversaries sure as hell do. They don't care.
Absolutely, I mean, they do.
Here's a challenge for everybody listening. Go, AWS doesn't matter. Spin up just like a Lambda function, some serverless compute that's cheap, and then either put it on a public IP or in a public domain name. And then in that little bit of compute you have, just print out like the HTTP headers, the logs, query strings, URL into the console, or grab it from the load balancer and from an event. And you'll quickly see, leave that thing up for a month, how often they just go full send, right? Like, I have little baby Lambda honeypots like that that'll, you know, respond with different headers to make it look like it's a database or whatnot. It's goofy, but it keeps the automation. It's not an attacker, right? It's not somebody behind the scenes fighting me.
Yeah, it's all scripts.
It's all scripts, but like, that's how they deal. They deal in volume. They deal in lethal volume. Like, it's effective fire. If you had something that matched it, like, you'd be up, you know, Defecation Creek with paddles this deep, right?
Right.
And you'd be in a bad day.
This is why, you know, the bulk of these Amazon vulnerabilities that are discussed and disclosed out there in the world, you have to read the fine print, because the odds are it wasn't Amazon. The odds are somebody left an S3 bucket in the clear, or somebody stored credentials in the clear, or somebody had crappy key management, or somebody had, you know, fill in the blank. There's a million and one ways to self-destruct, right?
Yeah. No, 100%. I mean, that's why there's so many procedures in MITRE ATT&CK, and, you know, you're not going to get them with all your controls, right? Like, some of your controls will fail. Your defenses will fail, right? It goes back to, you know, two is one is none, you know, be fast, like all the tropes. Like, now I'm talking in tropes, but still, the whole thought experiment was like, just see the volume and how much stuff there is. It's like, you can't ever hope to counteract all of the threats, all the different types of injections and web attacks and whatnot. You're not going to stop everything at every layer. It's about, again, you know, having the right decision and capability given to you, to your team, use data, and have fun, you know, like, I think that's lost as well, ignoring people, having fun. And I think we're at a fun time right now in security. There's so many ways to get the job done. You know, gone are the days of having a freaking VNC and SSH in every box and know where everything is and label everything. Like, there's a lot of stuff out there, but there's so many ways to be more effective at our jobs and learn new skills. And I don't know, I still nerd out about it. And when I'm having tough weeks, right, it's comforting, right, to be like, okay, like, I remember why I'm doing this. And the money helps too.
Well, Jonathan, thanks so much for coming on down to the ranch. Thank you, listeners. Y'all be good now.